This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, and I'm happy as a little skylark right now. Patrick's back. How was your vacation, man? Good to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back. It was kind of a whirlwind. It was a very quick 2 weeks, so now I'm back.
Oh, the dread and horror of returning to this crap fest is right back in your face. Just in case you missed it, Byron Buxton's injured already.
I couldn't resist. I had to text Brett about it. It's like, you're going to have some fun with Matt that day.
Oh, Mr. Glass. They got Kansas City tonight, right?
Yep.
I think they're at KC. All right, we got a lot to get to today. Brett's got his usual interview coming up with the Minnesota Reformer folks coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. But to start us off today, we are heading on down to 25A. That is the district around Rochester. Kim Hicks is the DFL candidate. She is running for that seat. She's kind enough today to join us as our Democrat of the day. Hi, Kim.
Hey, how are you guys today?
I'm doing very well. I got to tell you, you and I talked for about 5 minutes this morning, total 5 minutes. And I was like, wow, she's fantastic. I'm going to be excited when you get to St. Paul because you are kind of the DFLer I love to chat with because your life experience just gets out there and you basically are... It's politics from your heart, and you can tell right away when you start talking to you.
Ah, thanks. I tell my teenagers all the time that I'm fun and people like me.
I do too.
Agree. It's sort of weird.
I do too, but no one ever believes me.
I know. It's the struggle. The struggle is real. So, thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm super pumped.
Well, thank you very much for the time. I know you are really busy today. Let's, for everyone out there, give everyone an idea exactly who you are. Who is Kim Hicks?
Yeah, so I am currently the DFL endorsed candidate for Minnesota House 25A, which is Rochester. So 2 years ago, this seat was really, really red. It included a lot of Dodge County and a lot of rural territory. I got asked things in debate like that I knew nothing about. So as a person who lives in the city, right? And so this time with redistricting, it is Rochester and a little bit of Orinoco. So it's a much, much more urban district. And it's my home. I've been here forever. Moved here when I was in third grade, went to high school here, left for college, came back, and raising my very, very complicated family of five here in town. So,
you know, I will say this, as I'm a kind of a political wonk and I love looking at maps, especially the redistricting maps. And one of the things that was very clear, at least to me, was the Rochester area. I don't think the seats that it did have represented that area correctly. Now, I think these seats, as they're drawn now, are a much better representation of that community. Would you agree with that?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Rochester, you know, going back to when I was a kid, has really changed in the last, you know, 30 years. It's changed demographically. It's changed population-wise. It's changed across the board. And so as we look towards the future, I think it's important that our representatives reflect that change.
Mm-hmm. As you look at this district, this is one of the things that's amazing. And by the way, I want to encourage everyone, MinnPost has got their complete list of all the House and Senate races and who's running for everyone. Gives you all the breakdown on that. And that's a very good tool if you want to keep in track of who's running where. And one of the things which I find to be amazing is you don't have a Republican challenger yet down in 25A.
I don't. And I'm not sure who it will be. I have to tell you, I haven't even heard whispering. And that's great. So that's fun. but having lived here my whole life and grown up here and know what this community needs and what this community is feeling, I just really feel like it's going to be hard to come and say, yeah, we actually feel that none of that's accurate, because it's not true. We need leaders who are committed to progressive values to move us forward. You know, Rochester, just like the rest of Minnesota, has major wealth disparities, and we've got to move that needle forward. And, you know, Rochester is known as the Med City, right? So we've got all, you know, lots of folks in healthcare, and we know that healthcare in this state is not working. It's not working for many, many people. It wasn't working for me. Mm-hmm. One of the stories that I tell about healthcare is that when my daughter, my youngest, was little, she had 8 pediatric ICU stays in the span of like a year. Mm-hmm. It was super, super intense for us. And my husband's insurance, through his employer, which was a self-insured plan, did not cover the formula, the elemental formula she needed at 1 year old to stay alive. And it was like $600 a month.
Wow.
To keep her alive. And yeah, no, it was intense. And her formula wasn't covered by his employer. My employer charged $225 per person on the plan. So that was also not financially sustainable. But we made too much money to qualify for public assistance, right? And because we were offered insurance through our employers, we couldn't, you know, tap into some of those other resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you know what I had to do?
What?
As a mom working full-time, already working full-time, running a nonprofit, I went to work at a group home company doing sleep overnight full time. I worked 2 full time jobs, 35
wow.
hours a week at the group home, 40 hours a week running a nonprofit, while my husband worked 40 hours a week at his job to keep her alive. And even with all of that, do you know how much I took home from the group home?
Mm-hmm.
Caring for people with disabilities full time overnight? Every 2 weeks, I brought home $236.
Wow. You know, it
after we paid that insurance premium.
And you know what you just pointed out there is the real world kitchen table mechanics of the whole thing. Is that and we all want to remind everyone what you just heard Kim describe is what Republicans want to put back in place at its harshest level, because they don't care. They just do not. And this system is broken because the insurance didn't cover things. You're having to work another job full time and hardly getting paid there. The great curse that you have is you love your children. And that is why you're in the situation you're in. That, in my mind, should not be the justification for people to bankrupt you.
Well, and you know what the worst part is?
What?
So now I ran a nonprofit, did all the fun stuff, like it was great. Worked program manager at a nonprofit, loved the work, right? Love what I do now. But today I'm a state employee and I'm in a union. And I'm in a union that provides me with high quality health care, right? Mm-hmm. And so today, my family, when I got breast cancer last cycle, when I ran and got breast cancer in the middle of the campaign, my family didn't go bankrupt. Because I was in a union, because I had protection, it was luck that we caught my cancer, and it was my union that protected my family from bankruptcy. All Minnesotans should have protection to do just that. It should not be purely based on who you work for that your family is able to survive or fail.
Mm-hmm.
We have too many Minnesotans who are not keeping their heads above water, and we can and should do better, and it is time to step up and do the work.
You know,
that's why I'm running.
And you know, it's the other side of that, the healthcare issue. I mean, the Mayo Clinic, it's a jewel of medicine. I mean, it really is. It's a great,
yep.
Great hospital there. Fairview Southdale, U of M Twin Cities Hospital, Abbott Northwestern. There's a lot of great hospitals, Children's in Minneapolis, great hospitals here. But what this pandemic exposed is that unless you are near these big cities, unless you're there, that the healthcare is not equal. And so let's get out into some rural areas where there is no unions to help out people. And there's no real good healthcare system out there. Nothing against the fine people that are working there, but they're underfunded, they're understaffed, and they're sparse. And that is it. We have to have a complete reimagining of the entire healthcare industry, from the side of the insurance to the inside of how much should people have to work to basically just love the children or the family members they have and want them alive, to making sure that, you know, quality healthcare is available to all people regardless of where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was going through cancer treatment, the amount of people that I would talk to in the waiting rooms and in the chemo room who were staying in Rochester or who were driving hours from Greater Minnesota, because there was no oncology option, you know, within 3 hours of their home. So how do you do daily chemotherapy, right, for 4.5 hours plus drive 3 back and forth and still somehow get better and take care of your health? Hard.
Okay.
Hard, and it's not fair.
No, it's not. And it's and it's just you say it. I kinda tell you, one of the things I'm you're really very quickly running up the list of my favorite politicians at this point, because the way you say things is just so you say things so practically that are impossible for anyone to counterpoint on it, because you're coming at it from experience. It's very, if I can, and once again, Democrat of the day is Kim Hicks, 25A. This is a new district, basically north side of Rochester. DFL, good chance DFL is going to hold that seat. But when you look at things here in with your kids, you got your, you know, as a family issue, let's go to education. What are some of the things that you've noticed in the education system that need some help?
So I am super passionate about special education. Mm-hmm. I was a special ed teacher, left that because, as it turns out, that was an I actually liked children, and that's really hard to do with the funding issues that come with special education. So we have not fully funded special education ever from the federal level, and the state hasn't really made up the difference, and so our local districts have to make it up. And, you know, like, math is a fundamental skill. If it costs, if an IEP says that a child needs a one-to-one para and there isn't federal dollars and there aren't state dollars to pay for that one-to-one para, you know who has to pay for that? The local district. You know what that means? That means there's one less general ed para in kindergarten, because we have a workforce shortage and we have a funding shortage. And so we've got to pay for it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that creates us versus them. So us as parents of kids with disabilities on IEPs who are using resources, and them being general ed teachers, parents, who are drowning because we're not giving the support there either. It's not fair, and it's just another way that the Republicans are creating division between folks to try to prioritize their message. And it's wrong, and it needs to stop. All kids matter, and all kids need to be funded.
And I don't think what we're talking about here is, I think we can all agree, is not a budgetary line for slicing just because you want to give another billionaire a tax break. And you I want to, I don't know if you've seen what they did up here in Hopkins, where they kind of combined the special ed kids into the general school population. I think that that's a great program. It works on a lot of different levels. And that's the kind of education system we have, that we should have just one unified system that all kids participate in. And you can do that. It does cost a little money, but you end up with a much better education system and much better kids all around with that system. I saw it firsthand in Hopkins.
Yeah, well, and as it turns out, those people aren't going to be segregated and apart from each other as adults. So maybe we should work to be inclusive from the beginning.
Amen. A freaking men. And you know what was interesting is, you say that we talk about the special ed kids. Both my kids that went through school with the special ed kids merged in with the regular school, they all said it was so cool. It was so wonderful. And they just enjoyed it. And I'm like, why aren't we doing this? Why was it? And I've talked about this before. Why was it the RV shed behind the gym? That's where the special ed kids went. Why weren't they ever in here? And it's just, I think we've approached this whole thing wrong. Yes, it might cost a few extra dollars, but we're getting a better education overall, and we're not creating an us-them environment starting in kindergarten that the Republicans want to push forward.
Exactly. And what we need to do, what we have to do, is fund special education. The feds have been promising us since the 70s, since they passed IDEA, that they were going to do this, right? Like, they told us they were going to do it. They promised us they were going to do it. It's been a partially funded mandate for, I don't know, longer than I've been on the planet. So it's time. We have $9 billion. Could we take some of that money, please, and take care of our kids and fill in that gap and fill in that hole and fulfill the promise we have made to Minnesotan children?
Absolutely. And
it isn't rocket science.
Oh, it isn't. And you look at, you said it, we got a budget surplus here. Take a look at what the Republicans offered every school district. Zip. Nothing. And they, it always blows my mind out in these conservative parts of the state where the schools, they sit there and say, we can't get anyone to work here at the school. I said, really? You guys vilify them every step of the way, don't want to pay them, call them moochers, scream that you need to control what's going on in the classroom, tell them they're horrible people, but no one then wants to come work for you? Gee willikers, I wonder why. You know, it's a system that is broken. And if you trust a Republican with education, you're a fool. You haven't had an education, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, and one of the things I hear from families all the time is, they're working on kids with disabilities as part of this, right? So they'll say things like, well, the voucher program would give you options. You know what the voucher program would do for kids with disabilities? It would create a system where private schools would not be legally required to support them, accept them, or care for them. And we would have a whole lot of kids with disabilities left in our public schools with no funding and no support, and everybody would be like, oh, what happened there?
Yeah. Huh. Oh, exactly. Yeah, the voucher system, that's so you know, the rich guys can get their kids' private schools paid for by the taxpayers. That's what that's all about. It's not about improving education. As a matter of fact, considering the most kids you could take out of any school district in a voucher program into private schools or into a charter school or into a religious school, if you so choose, it would be about, 15% of the population of the school, which means 85% of the population gets left behind and gets nothing. And that's not a good policy.
No. And again, if a child has a disability, the private schools aren't required to take them.
Mm. Oh, and they're not
going
to.
They aren't required to take them.
Yeah, and they're not going to. That's too much money. They're private school. They're about profit margins. They're not about making sure that they're inclusive. That's why kind of the general idea why they've got a lot of private schools is not to be inclusive, if you want to know the truth. That's the way I look at a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
And again, we're segregating people, right? And that doesn't work. It doesn't work, like you mentioned, in your school up in Hopkins. When we integrate, when we work together, and when we create community, right? people with disabilities, people of different backgrounds and racial, ethnics, and religions, when we are of Minnesota.
Are you there? Oh, did we lose Kim? Oh, we lost Kim. All right. Well, he lost Kim, unfortunately, as he was driving around. Guys, you just heard this. Kim Hicks is fantastic. She's freaking fantastic. 25A, North Rochester. It's a blue district now. And Kim is, and I don't, you just heard Kim Hicks. I honestly feel as if the reason why the Republicans don't have a candidate is she's too good. They already know that they're going to lose, so they're already counting that as a loss. Go down. Help out. Volunteer. 25A. Rochester is cool. It's a great town. 25A, fantastic community. Head on down there. Volunteer, donate. Kim Hicks for MNHouse25A.com. That's Kim Hicks for MNHouse25A.com. I'll link to the website a little bit later on. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Think your company's safe? Your staff is working from home, right? As I speak.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. She's awesome. Kim Hicks for Minnesota House 25A. Kim Hicks for Minnesota House 25A. It's... There is a reality out here that the Democrats this election cycle have a really amazing opportunity. Now, I do want to drive you. Go check out MinnPost's dashboard that tells you about who's running in each race. And when I came across Kim Hicks down in 25A, I was stunned. She said this was Republican territory for years. Now, granted, I think that the gerrymandering down there the last 10 years kept that district from the representation that really it had. But now it's still there. But it's not like that the Republicans are persona non grata per se down there. It's not. It's, you know, as opposed to, like a first tier suburb of Minneapolis where it might be, a 65-35 ratio DFL to Republican. Down there it might be, you know, 55, you know, 60 to 40. You know, it does, so it's not out of reach in the Rochester area. So I was somewhat stunned when I saw that Kim Hicks right now does not have a challenger for 25A. So I took some time, started to scroll through the MinPost dashboard for the races. Now, let's be honest, okay? Will there be a Republican on each one of these tickets? Sure. Sure. In the loosest definition. Whether that's some guy who's an avowed Nazi because no one else wants to run like they did in Chicago. Remember, no one else wanted to run in that district. So the Republican was a Nazi, and the Republicans were so desperate to have anyone run there that they basically, you know, they condemned him, but they didn't stop him from running as the Republican. That was down in Illinois, if I remember correctly. And Illinois Nazis, man. Anyway, I can't stand Nazis, period. Let's just be honest. Let me just get through the caveats there. When you look at it, what they have, so you'll have in, let's take the metro area in Minneapolis. Will there be a Republican on the ticket? Sure. He's not going to get any help from the Republican Party. He's not going to get any money from the Republican Party. He's basically going to be there. They'll say, hey, thanks. We appreciate you running, but you're going to have to do this all on your own, because they already know there's no chance on the planet that they're going to win as a Republican. But there'll be a Republican on the ticket. But right now, there's no major Republican task to run with Kim Hicks. And like I said, dear Lord, she's fantastic. Holy God, we got to get her into St. Paul. And like I said, I mean, it's my guess is down in 25A, Republicans have been saying, hey, do you want to run for this seat? It's an open seat. You could possibly pick it up. Who am I running against? Kim Hicks. Thanks, but no thanks. So there'll be some guy down there. He might be, you know, an extremist, you know, the QAnon candidate for the Republican Party or something like that. But there'll be someone running against her. But it brought up an interesting point. Like I said, I went through and I counted the amount of House races where right now there's not a Republican on the ticket. And it's pretty stark. There are 45 Minnesota House races, 45, where there isn't a Republican listed as the challenger to the Democrats. Now, if you're asking, 67 gives you the majority, which means you only need to win 22 more House seats statewide, and that includes a lot of suburban seats which lean Democrat, a lot of them, to hold the majority in the House. Can I go on the record now? I volunteer, donate. Don't take anything for granted, but I'm pretty sure we're seeing Kim Hicks in St. Paul coming up in November. So, and it's not just here. Duluth, you got St. Cloud, Mankato, Rochester, got the Moorhead seat. Heather Keeler is up there. You've got a few other seats up in the range in northern Minnesota. Republicans are handing Democrats a gift at this point. We only, to hold the House, you just need 22 more seats, considering they're not even running candidates in 45 of the House races. The Senate is not as bad, but it's still pretty bad. To have a majority in the Senate, you need 34 senators. 19 of the Senate seats right now, 19 of them do not have a Republican challenger, which means all you need is the 15 more Senate seats and you can win. And once again, there are a lot of seats around the metro area where there's a Republican running, which the Democrats should win that seat fairly easily. You look at Rochester, you look at Duluth, you look at St. Cloud area. I got to tell you right now, the Democrats have a freaking gift here. If you get into these battleground districts and you volunteer and you donate, guess what? This is over. This is over. Republicans can't win. The only way the Republicans win is if the Democrats do not show up. It's that simple. I mean, like I said, there are 45 House races. They're not even running a Republican. So they have quite literally focused their entire attention on about 7 or 8 House seats, which they are must wins for them to be able to take over the House. You'll be able to identify those, by the way. You'll be able to identify them by the Republican out there saying, hey, I have a problem with the extremists on the Republican side, too. Where did you get the idea I was an anti-vax nut job? I don't think those guys are right. I believe in medicine and science. It'll be that guy. Don't trust him. It's a Republican. Sweet Jesus, don't trust him. They're basically spewing lies. Don't trust them. As soon as they get in, it's like, I only vote the way I am told to vote by the master. You know, ding. You know, that is who they are. But you can tell the seats that the Republicans are desperately going to try to get on, because they'll tell the Republican candidate, you can basically lie through you be as moderate. Hey, tell them you're really a Democrat. We don't care. Just win that seat at all costs. Republicans don't have money. Now, DFL, I will say there are indeed Republican seats where there's no DFL candidate. That's on you. And you know why? Because if they have to spend money in districts that they don't anticipate having to spend money in, they will lose. They will lose badly too. If there is a Republican representative or a Republican senator who basically is expected to win their seat, and all of a sudden they're having to pull money from other races to try to hold that seat, well, that's dominoes that fall on over, and look at the pretty pattern. It's all blue. So when you hear the doom and gloom media talk about Democrats are cursed, they're doomed, they got no chance, that's a lie. In Minnesota, the DFL is strong and is as strong as ever. They are as strong as ever. And right now, they don't have to do too much heavy lifting to dominate 22 House seats. And I say this once again, I understand there's going to be a Republican running in these seats, and you don't take any of these seats for granted. 22 seats. That's all the House, the Democrats need at this. And a lot of seats are, I'm not including a lot of seats in the metro area. Go look at the MinnPost dashboard. Go look at that. And you're like, where in the world is where do the Republicans think they're going to win at this point? And they're going to have Jensen as their gubernatorial candidate. Jensen and Og. Oh, by the way, Patrick, since you've been gone, we've decided to label Matt Burke, the lieutenant governor candidate for Scott Jensen, as Og. So it's like when we call Jensen and Og, there you go. Vaccines are the devil's tool, right, Og? Yes, boss. Oh, I have no problem doing that. I stand by my assessment, folks. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, I'm late. How did I get so late? All right, we'll take a break. Come on back. Let me get into some of the numbers and fundraising down in one. We talked with one of the candidates yesterday. Let's talk a little bit about that, because there's some interesting developments there. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Watched Purple Rain the other day. That's not how you stand on a dock if you want to cast. I'm just going to let you know. Your legs can't be splayed like that. You need to get them a little. You need to get a little bit more flexibility if you want to do some casting. I mean, that's what you got to do. It always amazes me. I watch that movie, and every time I see Prince standing splayed legged on the dock, I'm like, you're not going to catch any good fish that way. You got to kind of get more. You know, bend those knees a little bit. Get in there. There you go. 952-946. In case you're waiting, that was a lovely Prince song I just played. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Mike is in Columbia Heights. Let's go on over to Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Matt.
Hey.
Hey, you know, it seems to me the Republicans have a real problem upholding their oaths. Jensen, he believed in the big lie, and he didn't follow the Constitution, which he took an oath to uphold. And he's also a doctor. He took the Hippocratic oath to do no harm, and yet he stood in front of the insulin relief bill that was going through. Plus, he was against vaccines and against masks. Now, you take an oath to do no harm, it seems to me if you oppose scientific medical advances that help people, you're doing harm. So apparently he doesn't really believe in the oaths he takes.
You know, Mike, thank you very much. Let me expand a little bit on my thoughts on Jensen. If you've heard us, the second he left, now, once again, I want to make sure we understand something. Jensen wasn't always this extremist. He wasn't. He basically was, I mean, he was the guy that came up, he was the Republican that championed the insulin bill. You remember that, where insulin, offer insulin to diabetics? And a lot of Republicans were mad at him about that. And when I saw them, I saw the Republican leadership force him to vote against his own bill to kill it, to prevent it from passing, because Republicans wanted to use the lives of diabetics as a bargaining tool to get a tax break for millionaires and billionaires. You could see he was heartbroken. I mean, this wasn't a guy at that time who was this loon ball. But what, and here's the thing, is when Jensen started his campaign, the first thing I said, you can go back and listen to the show tapes. I said, okay, here's a guy, moderate. He's considered metro area by a lot of Republicans, although most of the people in the metro would not consider Watertown, that, you know, that western side of Lake Minnetonka necessarily in the heart of the city. But he'd be considered a suburban area Republican. So he goes on and he starts doing the most extremist, far-right, loonball stuff. And I said, you know what? He's not stupid, because that's where the Republican Party is today. It's on this extreme far-right. It's not the worst plan. The thing I thought, though, was that at some point he would, because then he basically could, the minute he wins the Republican nomination, throw down the far-right, loonball, QAnon, Trump really won, veil, and run as, hey, you all remember me as moderate Scott Jensen. Vote for me. And I thought that that would be his plan of action. Last week, when he's sitting there still trying to argue that all the people that died of COVID didn't really die of COVID, that they would have died of something else anyway, which brought up the point, well, we all die of something anyway. You know, are you then saying that no one's died of cancer because eventually old age would have taken them? Is that what? I still don't understand what he's saying. But he is committed to that far right, lunatic fringe now. And here we are. This is April. We've got, 6 months? May, June, July, August, September, October, 6. He's got basically 6.5 months to basically try to find some way to appeal to moderates, and not just moderate Republicans. He needs to win some of the moderate Democrats, especially in the suburbs. And I can tell you, loonball conspiracy theories, your grandma really didn't die of COVID. She was going to die of emphysema anyway. So why are you upset at COVID? Really? That's your bedside manner, doc? Yikes. Your nana, yeah, she didn't die of COVID. She would have died of heart disease anyway. So, I guess you should be grateful that this happened, huh? What are you talking about, man? They died of COVID. That's what happened. The adding of Og, and you see, and by the way, adding of Og is the ticket, the lieutenant governor candidate on that ticket, I thought was actually a pretty good move, because I still was anticipating this shift back to the middle. And so you have Og out there, staring at the sun as your far right loon ball part of your ticket. And here, so he's going to drag in all the flotsam and jetsam out there on the far right extremism of the party. And here he is going to say, I'm really a moderate Republican. And nah, it doesn't seem like he's going to come back, or at least at the time being, he's determined that he can't do that yet and still win the Republican nomination. Oh my God. I still to this day think there's going to be a born again Dr. Jensen. It's going to be born again. Oh my God. I was coming down the doctors, but now I am a born again moderate. Oh, praise Jeebus. Praise Jeebus. I think that that's what's going to happen. He's going to, I still think that that's, the second he wins the Republican nomination is like, who are these loon balls? Oh, Someone go get Og and get him out of the sun, will ya? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Gare Bear, Gary in Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Gary.
Oh, man.
Hey.
Yeah, I just watching the PBS today on over in the Capitol. The Republicans are crying about, oh, you're throwing money at schools and they can't read anyway. I mean, maybe it's because they fund all of us. And then when they give all the money to the oligarchs, you know, the buttons of privilege, that's good investment. They're the job creators. And then with us, it's spending or throw the money away or giveaways. I tell you, I guess we're the real elites, huh, according to them.
Well, yeah, I would say so. I think that that's what they believe. Thanks, Gary. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So far on the DFL side, we made this decision a while back, Patrick. We were going to interview all the special election Minnesota 1 DFLers. Oh, come on in, Republicans. The water's fine. It's not as nice as the grotto over in St. Paul, but still, who wants to take a dip with me? Hello there. As you can see, I have tanned my genitals. Sorry. Tucker Carlson, what are you doing, man? Anyway, we have done a fantastic job here so far of getting the DFL special election candidates in here. Yesterday, we had Sarah Breakbill Hackey on. Richard Painter was on last week. Jeff Ettinger we had on as well. Rick DeVoe, you're more than welcome to have him come on the show if you'd so like to have. They went through the money that they have, the cash raised and cash on hand down in the first congressional district, and it's really clear that the Democrats, the DFLers who are donating money, clearly want Ettinger as the candidate, the former Hormel boss down there. I tell you, he's a tough candidate for the Republicans, that's for sure. We had him on the air. Yeah, it definitely there. He has raised far more money than anyone else on the DFL side. Cash on hand, he also has a well over $140,000 available. Richard Painter is the second best, and he's in the $20,000 range. So right now, Ettinger definitely winning the money race. Whether that plays out later on will remain to be seen. But when you go to the Republican side, it is a little more interesting. Now, Matt Benda is the leader here. His cash raised, and now there definitely does seem to be much more of a money advantage on the Republican side. I mean, it's Ettinger would be basically up with the leaders, but no other Democrat right now is kind of getting close. Matt Benda, he's the guy, I think he's from Albert Lea. I can't remember all these guys off the top of my head. He's got about 160 or so, a little maybe around there, cash raised, cash on hand. Brad Finstad as well, just a little bit behind him, not substantially far behind, but he's a little bit there. Carnahan, Jen, and I'll get to her in a second here. Jennifer Carnahan, she's got a cash raise, but she doesn't have a lot of cash on hand. Munson leads by a mile on the cash on hand, but it should be noted, I think he gave his own campaign like $200,000. Is that right? I think it was right. I think it was $200,000 he gave his own campaign. So he's got a lot of cash on hand, but it's not because he appeals to the masses and donations. It's because, write a check, Dr. Jeremy Munson. That's right. Who could ever forget? Who could ever forget a man who's not a doctor nor a diabetic giving insulin advice in the parking lot of a Walmart because, hey, you people with your disease, shut up. I think that was the tone. It was kind of that tone there. Nels Pearson is also running. He's got a lot of cash on hand, but he doesn't have a lot of fundraising. And Kevin Kokina, he's well down the list. I mean, he's not, I don't even think, at $10,000. So it's much more of an interesting case. I thought this was funny. This was Broadcorp brought this up. Not a single member of Jim Hagedorn's family has made a donation to Jennifer Carnahan. Now, I don't know. He said he was looking at it. He said, to my knowledge, I don't see a donation for Jennifer there. I'll see if I can find it. The actual tweet that he put out there, but Yeah, that is pretty stark. That is pretty stark, that if that's the case, amazing. Just amazing if that's real, is that no one is making donations. Last night, and I still don't quite understand this, there was a debate for the Republican candidates down in Rochester. Why was Jennifer Carnahan at the kiddie table? she was on a table all by herself off in the corner. She wasn't there with everyone else. Broadcorp's tweet. Here's Broadcorp's tweet verbatim. I don't see anyone from Jim Hagedorn's family listed as a donor to Jennifer Carnahan's campaign in Minnesota 1. Wow. Wow. Love is in the air. I think that the Republicans down there are praying that it's not Carnahan or Munson. Because if it's Carnahan or Munson and Ettinger is the winner, I don't think it's even close. I think Ettinger creams them. So I think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of pressure to try to get either Finstad or Benda to knock off Carnahan and Munson. That would be my impression, because they'll have a better chance. And I don't think Ettinger is necessarily a loss with either one of them either. But I think that I think especially when you look at the voter makeup of Minnesota 1, don't get me wrong, the western side of Minnesota 1, that's far right loon ball territory. But when you get towards Rochester, you get over towards the river, it's not. And those Republicans are not big fans of QAnon and Nazis and far right is extremism and all that stuff. So they don't want a Republican candidate who is kind of known for their more extremist far right, cuddling up to that side of the party element. They don't want that. What they want is they want someone kind of more mainstream. So my guess is there's going to be a lot of pressure to get Benda or Finstad as the nominee. But still, Ettinger, if he ends up being the DFL nominee, that's going to be trouble, I think. I think Painter would be trouble, too, for the Republicans down there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come back, one more segment, and we'll round up hour one when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. To the progressive voice of Minnesota, it's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. I've talked about this at length a few weeks ago, and I made a post up on Progressive Citizen X about daylight savings time. And yes, it still saves money. And this is what I call ugly populism. It's that it's kind of one of those things that becomes a populist idea because people feed on the fact that you lose an hour of sleep in spring. That stink. Well, yeah, but if you go read the article I wrote on Progressive Citizen X, daylight savings time still saves a lot of money. So I don't know if it's necessarily a good idea to get rid of it. And I go through it, and it does seem like it's a good idea to keep. But there still are people out there that are just doing the knee-jerk populism thing. So Minnesota already has a law in the books that would make daylight savings time permanent in the state should the government allow it. That passed last year and was suddenly relevant in the U.S. Senate passed a bill mandating year-round daylight savings time, meaning the sun would set later in the clock year-round. The House has enacted on it. Minnesota lawmakers are now considering a bill to keep the clocks in place beginning in 2030, even if Congress doesn't act. Because current federal law bans states from enacting permanent daylight savings time, the Minnesota bill would mean permanent standard time. Wow. Get ready to spring forward and fall back has bipartisan support. Mary Kiffmeyer, Big Lake, included a measure to keep Minnesota on standard time in the Senate's large transportation bill, although there is currently no companion bill in the House. Mike Freeberg, DFL from Golden Valley, a key player in the clock debate, supports it. He authorized the 2021 bill to make daylight savings time permanent if Congress acts. I just want to get rid of the clock change, Freeberg says. I don't know why this is such a big freaking deal. Is anyone still dramatically suffering from daylight savings time at this point? I mean, seriously, if you are, then good luck. I mean, and I know there is definitely seems to be, and we talked about this when we talked about that article, there definitely seems to be a very strange, increase in deaths in the week after daylight savings time. But when you look at the amount of deaths we've stopped with the extra hour of daylight in the evenings, in the summertime, all summer long, with car accidents and car pedestrian accidents, that's actually pretty substantial. And I don't know if necessarily you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. I think that's kind of what you're doing. regardless of this, let me ask you guys this. What would you rather have? I mean, I don't have a problem with the current system. You know, I'm an adult. I can say, oh, I got to spring ahead. That means I probably need to go to bed a little early so I'm not too tired tomorrow. Ta-da! It's not exactly rocket science. And I don't hear too many people complaining in November when we get that hour back. But if we go back, and I said this before, say we go back to just standard time year-round. Well, that means come summertime, your sun does not even, the sun comes up at 4:20 in the morning. That means it's going to be light. It's going to be light at 3:45 in the morning. At 3:45. I hope you've got good blinds on your house. Dear Lord. And also that nice extra hour of light we get in the evening. Well, that's gone. It'll be dark at 8:30. It won't be dark at 9:30. It's always nice. I love summer. That's one of the things I love about summer is, you know, you got that late evening. If we go with the daylight savings time year round, your sun doesn't even rise until 8:50 in the morning in late December. And, you know, don't tell me that's not going to lead to a lot of depression in the winter months. Holy God. 8:50 in the morning is the sunrise? I've become more steadfast in this. Just keep it. It's ugly populism. And it does save us oil, and I don't think you're going to have just the same people complaining whatever the scenario is. So just keep it the same. Hour two is up next.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Matt and Patrick here. Did you go anywhere fun for your vacation? You were gone for a while here. Wait, did you go anywhere fun and exciting?
I did. I was in New York City for a couple of days. I went up through your old stomping grounds in Rhode Island, and then I ended up in Maine for a few days.
Nice. Good for you. Did you? Was it nice enough to get out at least? I mean, it wasn't raining snowing up there anymore.
It actually did rain quite a bit, especially while I was in Maine. It did feel like not washout conditions for the most part, but just some point every day there was something coming down.
Oh, that's, yeah. At least it's not snow. I mean, that's what you're getting here. I was watching Sven's weather forecast and on YouTube, and it was, yeah, it's been pretty amazing. It was like 13 of 19 days we've had rain in the state of Minnesota in April. It's been ugh. But, well, nice to have you back. I am post-Easter cooking phase. Today I had to make up a vat of egg salad because I have all these hard-boiled eggs. I got to do something with them. It's already half gone. I make a good egg salad. Jennifer, who's on staff here, I brought some in for her, and she's like, "Where I need more." I'm like, I can't do that. We can't do it. I'm not going to make more. You know how much work it is to make egg salad?
Oh, I won't go into details, but I do not know how much work that is actually. So,
that'd be a no. All right, thank you. I got that going. I got to make split pea soup tomorrow. I got a ham bone. I got to make a split pea soup with it. Got to do that. So, I hope everyone out there is doing well. You're going to get some candy. I'm just going to let you know. There's going to be some candy in here sometime this week. All right.
And I will keep an eye out.
Keep out there. Did you keep an eye out? Did you see the new Thor trailer?
I did not see that yet. I haven't had any time to watch. I mean, I'm sure it's on YouTube or, yeah, you know, wherever. But it's like, I'm not really watching TV lately because I've been out of town and, you know, just kind of settling back in because the Twins were on early yesterday, so that was the end of my TV day about 2:00 yesterday.
The Thor trailer, just take my money. Just take my money. That just looks phenomenal. There's a scene with him and Star-Lord where I swear I've watched it like 20 times already, and I keep laughing. I just keep laughing. The look on Hemsworth's face is just brilliant. I'm looking forward to it. That looks pretty good. I've got a week. What is it? 2 weeks from 2 weeks from Friday, the new Doctor. And or is it 2 weeks or is it going to be? Let's see. Today is the 19th. So, and yeah, it's 2 weeks. I think it is 2 weeks from then. I'm nice to have those movies back. I don't know if I'll try to go on opening weekend because I'm still a little bit, you know, skeptical in regards to the COVID and stuff like this, but you know, probably by the third weekend on a Sunday morning, that 8 o'clock showing they have, that's gold. That's gold. I don't mind forsaking my pancakes for a bucket of popcorn. Even though I have to go low salt, thanks to my health issues. But I'll probably go catch that and do this. I don't know. Twins. I think I'm looking more forward to that this summer. I just don't know if the Twins are going to hold my attention for too long. I mean, they're 4-6 right now. They'd be better if they didn't get blown out by the freaking Dodgers.
Well, you know what's weird is, you know, we're only 10 games into a 162 game season, but it's kind of been the opposite of what we thought it was going to be. That the bats have done nothing. The pitching's actually been pretty good, which I think is not what people were thinking was going to be the way it would go.
What's the Noah's batting average right now?
Oh, it starts with a zero.
I don't think it's a high number after that either. So I think it was 2 for 27 or something like that. It's not good. It's not good. Also not good. Jennifer Carnahan running down that Minnesota first race. The racket folks got something on their tip line. This is dumb and pretty much like Jennifer Carnahan. The reader included a screen grab of the congressional hopeful's name on her own campaign website. Wasn't overstating anything. They might be able to deduce, sharp-eyed viewers will be able to figure out there's a slight problem there. She basically puts her name Jennifer Carnahan correctly on the top, but when it says paid for by Jennifer Carnahan, I think it's paid for by Jennifer Carnahan for Congress, she put three N's.
Is that her alias, Jennifer Carnahan?
I would please. No, it's Jennifer and the Jen. It was the J-A-G-J-E-N-N-N-I-F-E-R. Jennifer. Heavy on that.
It's like a lawnmower. No, a weed whacker. Jennifer.
Oh, Jennifer. I would have, when I heard there might be a mistake, I was thinking, did they actually put Jennifer Grand Canyon Carnahan in there? But no, that wasn't it. Just Jennifer. It wasn't Carnahan's fault. Someone else screwed it up. It's simply another hilarious footnote in the messy life of the former Minnesota GOP chairwoman, lady who tried using status to dodge national park entry fees, befriended a sex trafficker, drunkenly welcomed death for her now dead husband, Trump-loving U.S. Representative Jim Hagedorn, whose seat she's now lovingly trying to fill, and reportedly brawled at a D.C. restaurant following his memorial service. Jennifer has just two N's, not three. It's spiritually similar news. Republican gubernatorial candidate Paul Gazelka briefly quoted Nicole Richie on his campaign website. So there are mistakes being handed out across the board. She's got the thing, which is crazy, is I can't rule out Carnahan down in that district. I cannot, because as much of a train wreck as she is at times, she has her following. And much like that severance check she got when she left the job, which was she was the tying vote to give herself the severance pay. I think there's just might be barely enough people within the Republican Party that are in support her. So it could end up being Carnahan of the Republican side down there. And I will tell you what. If it is Carnahan and Munson, trust me when I say this, the special election, then you got the general election right behind it. It is going to make it a nightmare for the Republicans down in one, if it's one of those two. And or the other, say it's Carnahan this time and then Jensen runs in the regular election. Oh, God. Funny stuff. The Patrick Cooligan interview, Brett, not able to join us today. He's heading up. He does his sports thing where he covers baseball and stuff like that. So he's got a game he's got to get to. But, Patrick, he's got his usual visit with, Patrick Cooligan. He gets to talk about the surplus, the GOP election bill. And of course, that one story that I've been kind of tracking too, the subpoena issue with, not only Max Nesterak, from the Minnesota Reformer, but Andy Mannix, the exceptional writer for the Star Tribune. The police are trying to get information from them. They're fighting it right now, and I believe the Reformer and the Star Tribune are now worked together on that to try to stop that lawsuit from going forward. It's Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reformer joining Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon, and that means it is time for our Tuesday conversation with Patrick Cooligan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. For the latest in Minnesota news and politics, make sure you go over to MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Got a couple of stories to talk about, but I want to start off with a column that you recently wrote that is titled, What to Do with the Surplus? The Economic and Moral Imperatives Are Clear. Of course, Minnesota right now does have more than a $9 billion budget surplus, so lawmakers have plenty of decisions to make. And as you might expect, the Republicans are pushing for tax cuts that would primarily benefit the wealthy, while Democrats want to reinvest money in things like education. So, Patrick, let's start off talking about taxes, because it's always very sellable on the surface, especially when you talk about something like cutting Social Security cutting the taxes on Social Security benefits, rather. But I am with you, and what you wrote in the article is that we should be very careful when it comes to cutting taxes, because I remember back during the 2000s when, after Minnesota enacted some steep tax cuts, we faced a number of budget deficits in the late 2000s. So what are your thoughts about this idea of, well, we should just cut taxes and give this surplus back to the taxpayers?
Yeah, I mean, this sets up a potential problem once the next recession comes and there's the money has evaporated, and you're left with having to cut deeply into education, higher education, health care for people who need it, services for people with disabilities. And like you said, this, we have a history of this. There were some tax cuts in the late 2000s, and then there was just kind of an ongoing budget crisis in this state, a structural budget problem for the first decade of this century, and kind of only got cleaned up when Mark Dayton came into office and introduced a tax increase on the wealthiest Minnesotans. So I think we want to avoid that for sure. And then I also think that, I mean, a tax cut doesn't really address the biggest needs in Minnesota right now. And the point I tried to make is that we're not a low tax state. That's not why business is successful here. That's maybe true in some other places, but here we do have substantial taxes, but in return, we have some of the best education and parks, a massive network of roads, and that's really why business succeeds here, is because we produce talented people who are very productive workers. And so the question is, like, what can we do to keep that going and or improve it? And there's a couple areas where we really seem to be struggling, and it's creating a struggle for kind of average families. One of them is child care. We have some of the most expensive child care in the country, even though the wages of child care workers are depressingly low. Education has certainly been a very difficult couple of years for schools around the country, but I think especially in Minnesota, where in our biggest cities, students missed an entire year. And we could certainly Monday morning quarterback on whether or not that was a wise decision or not, but that's the reality, and test scores declined, and we have these massive achievement gaps. So that's another area where we really probably need to invest significant resources to improve our outcomes. And if you think about what that does for families, the other one is housing affordability, where both rents and mortgages have just skyrocketed the last few years. And that's something else that the Twin Cities and Minnesota more broadly has been a competitive advantage for us, is housing affordability compared to these other big metro cities on the coast especially. So a $1,000 tax cut for the average family, if you think about it, sounds like a lot maybe, but then if you consider how much we would gain by cutting the average family's child care bill by $500 a month, I mean, you can see how one is just a much bigger advantage than the other, and the same with housing affordability. If we could really ramp up our housing supply, which is the issue right now, and create more affordable housing, that would have a much bigger impact on people's lives than $1,000 a year in a tax cut.
Well, like the cost of childcare is such a key area because you, of course, are a parent yourself. And I think when we think about the costs of childcare, it can be easy to overlook if you're someone who doesn't have kids, or maybe you raised kids decades or years ago when the cost of raising a child, at least with childcare, was a lot less. But you wrote about this shocking statistic, at least with your own family, how, well, how your family's childcare payments are roughly 33% higher than your mortgage. That is absolutely unbelievable, and I think that's a reality that really needs to be addressed because the cost of childcare is having a drastic effect on a lot of families, not just in Minnesota, but around the country.
Right. We have a labor shortage, and this is keeping a lot of parents, and especially women, out of the workforce. And so we're just a much less productive economy than we could be. That cost that we're incurring. The other thing is it's just something unfair about it insofar as it makes child rearing and parenthood kind of a rich man's game, which is deeply unfair and kind of inhumane. That's something that I do think needs to be addressed. And the thing is, like, you know, my son, I have a 4-year-old. I mean, we think of child as like, I think that you don't have any children. So I understand why you might say, well, what am I, you know, why should I be paying for somebody else's childcare? But in 20 years, my son enters the workforce. So it's not that long from now. And so, you know, the process of creating, good, productive citizens starts from day one. And Minnesota's always been good about that kind of thing, about investing in children and understanding that continuity between one generation to the next. And it's something that we need to pay attention to, like, right now.
Another aspect you wrote about was the importance of really just spending money wisely, as you cite some of the projects that have turned into boondoggles, whether it is, to a degree, the Southwest Light Rail project or what's happening in Fort Snelling as they're trying to build affordable housing, but yet it's costing about $900,000 per unit. And I'm thinking about a conversation I had a couple of months ago with Dave Durenberger, former Republican senator, who said, it's not really about the size of government, it's who is the most efficient. And I think sometimes that does get missed when we talk about, well, we should do this project or we should do that project. Really, the bigger impact is, well, whether the project is good and whether you're spending the money efficiently. And there are plenty of examples where we're not spending money efficiently. And really, if we get to that point where we can spend our money wisely, it would have a big impact on Minnesota.
Yeah, this is something I try to harp on with my fellow liberals. And I think they get annoyed with me, but it's just the importance of good governance. If you believe that government is an important force for social good and equality and innovation, then you got to pay attention to the details of governing and show people, the average people out there, that government can work, that it can do what it says it's going to do on time and on budget, and create a good service like a Southwest Light Rail should be, but now it's coming in late, way over budget, and so the average person just says, well, that's government screwing up again, because of this kind of crazy tax schemes, we end up with this quote-unquote affordable housing for people that's down by the airport for $900,000 a unit. I mean, the average person looks at that and says, well, what do we do? Why would we invest in affordable housing if that's what it's going to cost? And they have a point. And so it's just, you know, what I would urge my fellow liberals is just pay attention to those details of governing and govern well.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you do have projects that do turn into boondoggles, well, then obviously it does give fodder to those opponents like Republicans who are not in favor of those types of projects. Again, we are speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. I want to move on to an article that Dina Winter wrote, and this has to do, well, a couple of articles Dina wrote, and this has to do with, well, the Republican election bill and then their drive to recruit more election workers around the state. Now, let's start off with this election bill, because what the Republicans are proposing in the state Senate would create ballot board observers and then require ballot boards to be live streamed when they're opening absentee ballots. That's again what's in the Republican bill right now. And I can see a lot of problems with this right now when you're allowing these partisan observers to have the ability to challenge election judges and their rulings. I could see that really slowing down the process and creating all sorts of suspicion. And that's one of the reasons why Democrats and also the group, the League of Cities, are opposed to many of these provisions that would require the ballot counting to be live streamed, which of course is an enormous cost. And then of course, allowing partisan workers to be observing the process as well. So talk a little bit about this bill and the response that we've been seeing from Democrats and cities that are concerned about what's in this Republican proposal.
Well, I mean, to me, this is, it's all pretty cynical because you have the former president of the United States saying that the 2020 election was rigged. And, of course, he's wrong. There's just no evidence of that. I mean, we've had hand counts of entire states multiple times. You know, they had this phony audit out in Arizona. They still didn't turn up anything. And so, you know, you have this complete disinformation campaign. And then Republicans who don't, you know, Republican elected officials, they actually don't believe that the election was rigged. But then they go around and say, well, that there's this mistrust in our election system. Well, I mean, they're the ones who created the mistrust to begin with. And now they're going to say we have to institute these really, I mean, just ridiculous measures. I mean, you mentioned this live streaming of the ballot board proceedings and really it's massive amount of surveillance. And it's going to be a great expense to the counties, the municipalities that actually do the election work. I think it's also going to be just another thing that's going to prevent people from wanting to volunteer to be election, basically poll workers. We call them election judges here. Mm-hmm. And it's going to lead to, it's really just heightens all of the mistrust. But that's where we're at right now as a result of this is all the result of the 2020 election and these fraudulent claims about the results of 2020. And so this is the response. Democrats have their own bill in the House, to their credit. I mean, one of the bills, I think, one of the provisions, a couple are really notable, and one would provide extra security for election workers, which unfortunately is what we need now because of some of the threats that have been leveled. It's just strange that we're in this place right now, but we are.
Well, and talking about the idea of live streaming this ballot counting, yeah, that certainly sounds like a good idea on the surface, but then the question is, where does the money come to pay for this? Because it's not as simple as just, you know, having someone over in the election office grab their iPhone and stream what's happening that way. It's a little bit more complicated than that. So it would pose a cost on cities and municipalities around the state. And then, of course, as you mentioned, would certainly make volunteers a little bit more hesitant to participate in the system if they know they're constantly going to be under surveillance. But as you said, this DFL bill, I think it's very important to make sure that we do have these election security grants in there because So what was the statistic? I think it's 1 in 5 election workers say they plan on quitting by the 2024 election cycle, possibly even more than that. So we are certainly facing a shortage of election workers, and putting in these undue burdens is certainly not going to help with that situation.
Right. I mean, it used to be a job for, you know, I think we've seen these folks when we go to vote at the polls, they're often retirees, and they're just you know, doing their part as good citizens, and now we're gonna treat everything they do with suspicion and somehow and accuse them of being of masterminding some great fraud, and it's really unfortunate what's happened.
Now, Republicans led by Mary Kiffmeyer and others are making a push to recruit more election workers around the state. And what Dina wrote the other day, one of the quotes I found kind of funny, where they had one of the Republican volunteers saying, well, it was really courageous for this other man to go into Hennepin County and work as an election worker. But talk a little bit about this effort that Kiffmeyer and other Republicans are leading to try to recruit more election workers.
Yeah, I mean, they claim that the election judges who are just again, there's just poll workers, that they that there's this massive imbalance. There's more DFL poll workers than Republican poll workers. I have no idea how they could know that, because we don't have partisan registration in Minnesota. And they think that somehow the results of the election would be different if they had more Republican volunteers as poll workers, election judges. That's just not true. I think it certainly would be helpful to, I think we could always use more election judges. I think that's great. And it actually, might have a salutary benefit if these folks would see how the election actually goes. I mean, there's a lot of people who became instant experts in election administration after 2020, when in fact they actually don't know much about it. And I think if they saw it up close, they would see that there's actually very minimal amount of fraud, and they would see the process, and it maybe would help educate them and their neighbors as well.
And final piece I'd like to talk to you about has to do with the city of Minneapolis issuing a subpoena for Minnesota Reformer writer Max Nesterek and Star Tribune reporter Andy Mannix, as the subpoenas were issued in a civil case against the city of Minneapolis brought by freelance photographer Linda Tirado, who was shot by a foam projectile back in the aftermath of the police killing of George Floyd protests in 2020. She ended up getting blinded in one eye by the Minneapolis police while covering the protests. So I know we don't have a ton of time to get into this, but talk about exactly what the city is asking, because as I had a chance to read through this, this does seem like a major First Amendment issue from what they're seeking from both Max and also Andy Mannix of the Star Tribune.
Yeah, I mean, it's unclear to me why they think this is something they should do or appropriate. They face this lawsuit from an independent journalist who lost her eye for getting hit with a less lethal projectile by Minneapolis police. And so 2 years later, Max gets the subpoena, not just to appear for a deposition, I guess, to talk about what he witnessed in the aftermath of the police killing of George Floyd, but also for all these materials. Just text messages, emails, everything. They claim that they don't want to interfere with legitimate journalistic privilege. But as far as we're concerned, This is an attempt to really harass us, we're certainly fighting it, and we're going to make sure that try to make sure that Max doesn't have to turn over any materials that we think are important to the news gathering process, and we don't think it should sit for a deposition either. I think it's a little odd that Andy Mannix and Max Nesterak, who've written some of the toughest stories about MPD, face this subpoena.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly a slippery slope when it comes down to having to turn over these types of documents and information to the government. So I know you guys are fighting those subpoenas, so we'll have to see what results in the future with that. Unfortunately, we are just about out of time today. Again, we have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Patrick, as always, appreciate the time today. Thanks for coming on.
Great to be here.
All right, let's take a break and send things back to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick. Patrick, I don't know if you saw at all the Republicans trying to turn Julie Blaha's car accident last year into something far more nefarious than it was.
I've followed your coverage of this online, so I think I'm up to date.
Oh God, man, what's wrong with you people? Oh God, what's wrong with you people? I don't get it. Today I had a friend of mine, and I don't quite. He's a conservative. I've actually had some decent conversations with him. So, I mean, I'm not, and he doesn't, he doesn't do what a lot of conservatives try to do, which is kick open the door of your house, go to the bathroom in the middle of your floor, look at it and point at it with a smile on their face and saying, you got to like this. That's not him. He doesn't do that. So I will engage with him because, occasionally he makes a good point, and I don't have any problem saying that. But the reality is, and I think the reason why I can actually say this is because we have discussions about things. We don't, it's not just screaming the talking points. But one thing that he brought up, he just said, why did Ken Martin have to go there? And I said, wait a minute here. So Ken Martin shows up. They're at Farm Fest out in far western Minnesota. They're in clearly a serious accident. I mean, I don't know if you saw the pictures of the car, and it's upside down. They're both having to go to the hospital. They are so do you call your family members right away and have them all of a sudden frantically driving across the state? Or Ken Martin himself is at Farm Fest right down the road in the he's driving a DFL vehicle. You call him, I mean, because not only is he the head of the DFL, but he's their friend. I mean, I know Ken Martin, he's a nice guy. And if I was, say, out at an event out in western Minnesota and I had a car problem, I wouldn't have any problem saying, hey, Ken, it's Matt McNeil. Could you come in and do me a favor? I need to get a ride to an auto shop or something. I don't have any problem with it. He's a nice guy. I consider him a friend. He's an Uber lord handing down rules. That's the Republican, head of the Republican Party. That's Jennifer Carnahan. It's my way or the highway. Bow down before my greatness. I can't do her voice. I got it. It's not deep enough. I know. But Jennifer. Anyway. But no, I mean, I don't think that there's any problem with that. I would find that compassionate. And you know, he just kind of like, well, no, I just don't think that he had a right to be there. It's like, oh, so he's there to help these people. I will go the opposite way. If he wouldn't have shown up, say they would have rolled that vehicle and Ken Martin's in the DFL vehicle heading away from the accident. Bye. See you eventually back in Minneapolis. I would think that the outrage by the right and the left under that situation would be far greater than if he went over and actually made sure two senior members of Minnesota's government, the Minnesota auditor, and the minority leader in the Senate are okay. I think a lot of times they want the scandal to happen because they know that. Unless there is some sort of massive scandal that, Tim Walz rips off his mask, that Mission Impossible mask, and it's like, Jeffrey Epstein, no! It's like, unless something like that happens, they're going to have a heck of a time, especially if the Doctor and Og are running on the ticket. So I don't have a lot of patience for it, but I will say this as an observation. Funny that the second after Julie Blaha, the state auditor, we had her on the air with us yesterday. The minute all of a sudden she started making the media rounds and just absolutely throwing these allegations and grotesque innuendo from Human Centipede News that they were trying to push as this narrative. As soon as she went after that and knocked that down, all of a sudden, I don't have the far-right loon balls coming after me. I had one guy this morning say, you think you're a journalist. I was like, who the hell said I was a journalist? My God, I'm a talking chimp. I'm seriously, you throw an apple at me, I'll say, yeah, you want me to do 5 minutes on the Soviets? Sure, knock yourself out. I am that kind of guy. I'm a talk show host. I make comments about things that are going on. I'm not a journalist. I've never portrayed myself as a journalist. I've actually tried to be a journalist at times. I suck at news writing. I really do. I'm horrible at it. But that being said, no, come on, man. You guys are so desperate for some sort of victory to dispel the disaster that looks like it's heading your way. Like I said, 45 House seats are relatively safe because the Republicans aren't even running candidates against those Democrats. 19 Senate seats are relatively safe for the DFL because there's not a Republican running in those races. You guys are, you know, and this is the thing I think I get most upset about is the media, the way the media still kind of panders to the right, even though they're an absolute burning train wreck heading down a mountain into a cesspool of hell. The Republicans look like they could pick up some seats in 2022. Meanwhile, the Democrats are out there trying to, I don't know, prevent people from getting sick, prevent people from going bankrupt, trying to get people good jobs, trying to get affordable, you know, daycare. And all these Democrats, they're about to lose because they care about too many people. I mean, it's like, geez, get tired of the narratives. Get real tired of the narratives that the media pushes out on these guys. The reality is that the DFL is looking pretty good. And they're going to come. You think this is the end of this? Oh, please. Please. They're going to be frantically looking for something. And even if they don't find anything, they'll do what they did with Blaha and try to make something out of nothing. And if they still can't find that, they'll wait till 2 days before the election and just throw an outright lie out there and hope it just sways enough people to not vote before they have to put it out there. It's like, oh, you remember when we said that Tim Walz was a lizard person? Well, apparently that's not true. So sorry, the day after the election. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes, 1,742 newly reported cases. Wow. Four newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,472. 1,742 new cases. That's not just high, that is extraordinarily high. We haven't had a number that high in a while. No. That's right, it's Tuesday. Forget. It's Tuesday. Patrick, as I told you, it's been a heck of a weekend. It's Tuesday, that's why it is. It's a 3-day total. All right. Whew, thank God. That's like, what is going on? 17. All right, I'll recant that. It's a 3-day total, so that's not that bad. 72-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Monday, thus higher number of cases compared to what's been reported in the recent 24-hour updates. That said, the health department confirmed Monday that the cases are beginning to creep back up in Minnesota. But still, that's divided by 3, which is basically 600 cases per day. It's been about 2 months since the last big wave of COVID-19 began fading in Minnesota, ending with a run of more than 6 months where daily cases numbered in the thousands. But, you know, once again, it still is starting to creeping up there. In fact, the last date that 1,000 plus cases were credited into a single day in Minnesota was February 17th. Since then, totals have mostly numbered 500 or lower each day of the report. Not lately, though. They've been edging closer this past week up to 1,000 cases per day. That has put the state back on notice that the virus is advancing again. We are seeing the amount of virus circulating beginning to creep back up, Minnesota Department of Health confirmed on Monday, adding that they are hopeful hospitalizations and deaths won't begin to rise as well. Cases appear to be rising as mitigation measures in Minnesota and across the country are relaxed. A federal judge ruled Monday that the CDC cannot force airports and airlines to mandate masks. I'll get back to that in just a second. And just this week, a school district in Minneapolis and St. Paul ended their mask mandates. The coronavirus variant that is currently dominant in Minnesota is the BA2 version of Omicron. According to the latest Metropolitan Council wastewater data, 96% of the samples in the 7-county metro area are BA2 and the remaining 4% are the original Omicron strain. Through April 18th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 226. That's up from 207 reported on April 15th. Of those hospitalized, 21 people are in intensive care. That's down from 23, but 205 people are in non-ICU care. That's up from 184 as of April 17th. And the state reported that 3,902,632 people received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,694,229 people completed the vaccine series. There are 2,555,893 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots, and that includes a booster. And a total number of cases in the state of Minnesota is 1,440,303. So quite a few people there. Numbers are creeping back up. Let me, if I can, take a few minutes to talk about that ruling from that hack judge. Now, this is the judge. And in case you're wondering, who in the heck? The ruling basically says this. that the rights of an individual not to wear a mask supersede the rights of people to not get sick or die. Yeah, it's that bad of a ruling. It's a matter of fact, most legal experts are like, where in the world did you get the justification? If you've seen, the judge that passed this is the Republican judge that they put on who was so unqualified to be on the bench. The American Bar Association said she wasn't qualified. This is someone, she was 33 years old. She had never, outside of it being an intern, never had been in a courtroom. And they gave her a lifetime appointment to a judicial court. And she has just basically, and my guess would be, and if there was an investigation into it, my guess would be she was told how to rule on this from outside sources, and she followed her orders as demanded. That would be my guess if there was an investigation into this. And so basically what she said is, now in airports and airlines, you cannot enforce a mask mandate. And there's all these people there. All the newscasts are out there. Isn't this great? We don't have to wait. The oppression is over. Oh, my God. There was one woman who's on a plane. Her twins are on the plane. They have a compromised immune system. And as this happened, she's basically sitting there and all these people are taking off their mask. And her kids are incredibly vulnerable. And yet, their lives, see, that judge basically said those two young children, they don't matter. They can die. She's fine with that. She is fine with those children dying because the bigger sin for her is not trying to prevent those kids from dying from a preventable disease, but that guy over there doesn't want to go on a flight with a mask on because tyranny. This is lunacy. It's absolute lunacy. We have a pandemic that is still going on. You have a lot of places where this is still going strong. You have a lot of places where there aren't many vaccinated people, including some places in Minnesota where Republicans have convinced the people there, you don't need it. You don't need it. You can just let those medical bills pile on up. You don't need it. You can let your kids take care of paying off that debt. Here we are. We're just being stupid for stupid's sake. And we still need to be careful out there. Now, I have more faith in the Minneapolis school district, and the St. Paul school district, that they lifted the mask mandates, that the numbers they are seeing were not justifying of the mask. That's fine. But when you're on mass transportation, whether that's a bus, a train, or an airplane, whatever, you're in, especially airplanes, you're in a confined space with recirculated air. The reason why it was a good idea to do that is because you didn't want to have – the airlines didn't want to have to start canceling flights because they got so many sick employees. My guess is in the next 2 to 3 weeks, all of a sudden we're going to start seeing airline flights canceled because there are just too many employees that are out sick. This is why you want to another reason, reason 5,746,852. The reason why you need to vote Democrat is because look at what the Republicans are making a mockery of. They're making a judicial system right now where whenever a Democrat passes a bill, these Republicans scream, it's overreach. We got to strike this down. Freedom. That's what they scream. And then 3-4 weeks later, when the preventable tragedy happens, then the same exact Republicans will scream at the Democrats, you should have done more to stop this. You see? Because it's not about what is legal precedent. It's not about what the law says. It's not about what's best for Americans. It's about creating political talking points for Republicans. That's all it is. So they will continue to rule and rule obnoxiously until we get the Democrats in power for a sustained amount of years. And you throw out, when you get of these retirements of Thomas and Alito, you throw those clowns off the court and you put in some actual real judges. It is an absolute travesty that this is where we're at. But we're at this point because too many damn people, every freaking election, sit back and say, what's the big deal? Well, it is a big freaking deal. And for that woman on the plane with her two kids, hopefully they don't get sick as everyone else around them celebrates. We used to care about our fellow man. We used to care about our fellow human beings. But as a country that has one political party that screams how Christian they are, we are far, far from a Christian nation any longer because we just, and not, I'm not saying we should be a Christian nation, but what I'm saying is this, is that there's peace, love, compassion, caring. That's what we should be. And that's what Christianity is supposed to be about. It is. Go look at the book. It's supposed to be about love, welcoming, compassion, caring. We are a millennia away from that right now. And so until we get up our asses and go and vote, we're stuck in this cycle of hell. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Big news about being working downtown. I'll get to that here in just a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the sensational Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake with Robert Pilot. That's coming up here right after. It's an absolute privilege. It's a privilege to be the lead-in for that show. They are fantastic. 6 o'clock hour. Stay right here with us, including all night long. Great programming here, right here, all evening long on AM 950. We talked about this, what was going to happen. When all of a sudden people were going to start heading back, employees of Target corporate office in the Twin Cities will not be required to return to the office full time, the corporation announced this week. Instead, a flexible hybrid model will continue to allow employees to blend outside and virtual work into the future. In an email, a Target spokesperson said employees won't be asked to work in the office on a set schedule or percentage of time, but added physical offices will play an important role in how we work moving forward. Throughout the spring, Target plans to continue testing new ways of working to develop more hybrid work routines, as well as the headquarters in downtown Minneapolis. Target has its office locations in Brooklyn Park and in Eagan as well. In March 2021, the retailer announced it would be sending about a third of its downtown office space by exiting the premises of the City Center building, where at least almost 1 million square feet. The move affected about 3,000 of the employees of downtown Minneapolis. I remember about a year ago when I had a friend, and this was one of those friends I had who was very much against working remotely, did not want to work remotely, said this was going to be horrible, it was bad. This back in early 2020 when the pandemic first hit and everyone was going and starting work from home. She goes, I can't stand Zoom calls. I can't stand FaceTime calls. I can't stand it. Don't want to do this. About a year ago, so about a year into this whole thing, she's like, oh, I don't know if I ever want to go back. I have become so acclimated to it. And she goes, it's the little things. It's being able to go. I don't have to wonder where I'm going to go buy food and then wondering what happened to the $20 I had in my pocket. I just go into my kitchen and make a sandwich or, you know, having, you know, my own bathroom I can use and stuff like this. It was the little things that she had gotten to the point where she really loved. And she even came back and she said to me a year ago, I would be willing to forgo pay increases and benefits if they allowed me to stay in this work environment where I could work remotely. And I thought that was kind of an interesting statement. And I think that there are some businesses that are trying that approach, especially in the awakening of the worker that we've seen in the last year, where the workers are finally saying, you know, enough's enough. I'm not going to take this crap wages and these crap situations. In the positions where you can work remotely, I think you're seeing a lot of workers bring forward the idea that, hey, you don't necessarily need to give me a massive pay increase or a massive budget increase, although an in-house daycare would be nice. But that being said, if you basically have a situation where remotely or this hybrid model, I'll be happy. So I think that is something you're seeing. It's going to affect a lot of things, obviously, how much workspace a lot of businesses have downtown. But I think this is going to be something that workers, especially the younger workers, moving forward are going to want it. That's going to be a perk that they're going to want, is the ability to work from home at least for part of their work week, especially as if you got, you know, workers with young kids, that the ability to be able to, you know, have that flexibility and not have to pay for daycare, which is extraordinary. Does bring up the point, if you wanted people in the office, if you opened an in-house daycare, would you get people inside? I bet you would, if it was affordable. I bet you would. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. We're back on a Wednesday. Till then, see ya.